This week on Basic Black, Charleston, South Carolina started the sad ritual of burying the 9 massacred at the hands of a self-admitted racist gunman. The horrific, senseless violence has sparked a national conversation about laws, symbols, and history, part of America's persistent struggle towards racial equality. Later, join us online for a discussion on another race story which dominated the news. Much has been said about the case of Rachel Dolezal, the white woman who would be black. But tonight, you'll get to hear our take. That's our conversation coming up.
Our panel tonight, Reverend Emmett G. Price III, Associate Professor of Music, Northeastern University. Keith Maddox, Associate Professor of Psychology, Tufts University. Callie Crossley, host Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, 89.7 WGBH. Carol Bell, Assistant Professor in Communication Studies, Northeastern University. And Peniel Joseph, Professor of History, Tufts University. To join the conversation, please visit our website at basicblack.org.
The church is and always has been the center of African American life. A place to call our own in a too often hostile world. A sanctuary from so many hardships. Amen. Over the course of centuries, black churches served as hush harbors where slaves could worship in safety. Praise houses where their free descendants could gather and shout hallelujah. Rest stops for the weary along the Underground Railroad. Bunkers for the foot soldiers of the Civil Rights Movement. They have been and continue to be community centers where we organize for jobs and justice. Places of scholarship and network. Places where children are loved and fed and kept out of harm's way, and told that they are beautiful and smart, and taught that they matter. That's what happens in church.
That was President Barack Obama today delivering the eulogy at the funeral of Clementa Pinckney, state representative pastor, who was one of the 9 murdered in Charleston. Just a little, almost close to 2 weeks ago. We should note that this is the 3rd funeral, actually. There were 2 others on Thursday, 70-year-old Ethel Vance, and then 45-year-old mother Sharonda Coleman Singletary were laid to rest, and there are 6 more to come. The nation has just been responding forcefully, I guess I would say, on a range of emotion after the massacre itself. And that's actually the word to use because the crime was so heinous.
Yes.
But I want to begin in this way because our discussion is about laws and symbols and history tonight. When Ferguson happened, we said it was bigger than the event itself, that it meant something else. We asked the question, was it a moment or a movement? So I ask now, after Charleston and the 9 massacred, it was a spark, it seems, to ignite a kind of a firestorm of conversation around many issues. Do you believe that it's ignited something bigger than the event itself? I'm going to start with you, Keith.
Yeah, I would think so, absolutely. I mean, I think, again, historically, this is the kind of thing that happens, that you have a particular event that might get a few people involved, but as events tend to happen more and more, you get more and more involvement. There's another perspective on it, another group of people who might not necessarily have been paying attention at one point in time. They'll pay attention to the next one. And unfortunately, you need to see a number of events like this take place before you really get this groundswell of support and then hopefully some opportunities towards movements or progress.
And what is the message that you think people are responding to, Emmett Price? You know, what's below and what's beyond just the event itself?
Well, there's a couple of things that are going on here. I think that one, we have the initial event, right? And so now we've codified the Charleston 9, right, who will forever go down in history. Then you have this notion of the revival of the historic representation of Mother Emanuel, this church with a long legacy, And now that comes back to price. But then you have these obstacles, which I would call obstacles and you know, kind of these things around the flag, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, it creates a catalyst for another conversation for the flag, but the flag's been up since 1962, and there has been a hardcore press to get that flag down. This creates another momentum. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this does that. Mm-hmm. And then you have the issue around guns, right? This gives you another catalyst for a conversation, a renewed conversation around guns, but I'm not sure that this event, you know, creates the policy that we need to do this quote-unquote gun control. The conversation that I want to see that I haven't really seen is about the reality of hate in mm-hmm. this country. And the question is, as Americans, who are we? What do we believe? Why do we believe that? And how do we create this kind of notion of reconciliation so that we can all come together as one?
Peniel?
Yeah, I think it's massive. It's much bigger than Charleston. And I think one of the great things of the eulogy, I think the eulogy was brilliant, and he talked about slavery. One of the biggest things that we never talk about is slavery and its aftermath. And I think that was the first time you heard an American president say that, you know, linking the Confederacy and saying slavery was wrong and what they fought for was wrong, and fighting for Jim Crow in the aftermath of slavery was wrong too. So I think the biggest thing here we're talking about is racial inequality and connecting that inequality to public policy. The president talked about morality today in this eulogy, and he talked about the massacre providing Americans with the gift of grace. And he said it was unearned, but the gift of grace means that we no longer see with blinders. Mm-hmm. So he talked about how the past actually shapes our present. And he was talking about slavery and Jim Crow. So I think in a much more muscular way, and he's been doing this since Selma, mm-hmm. in a way. Mm-hmm. Selma, the podcast with Mark Moran, that show, where he used the N-word to great controversy. Mm-hmm. He's forcing not just a national conversation, but I thought what we got today was a reckoning. So I thought it was brilliant. And I thought he was a strong race man today that mm-hmm. Eric Holder has been. Mm-hmm. And that in her own way, Michelle Obama has been a very strong race woman. But I thought the president was a strong race man today. And I applaud him for that. But like Emmett was saying, we need policy behind this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get to the policy discussion, Carol Bell, you know, what you look at is how the language and how some of what's received by the public really may force mm-hmm. begin to start having a conversation that leads to policy change. And I wonder how you responded to President Obama's eulogy today.
Well, I would start a little bit further back. I think that some of the reactions to and some of the debates about rhetoric and what to call things have been really important. So that we've been having a conversation about, is this terrorism? Should we be using the word the massacre? Mm-hmm. What about the whole concept of white supremacy? That's a term that we're very uncomfortable with in this country, and so uncomfortable with that, you know, the Wall Street Journal publishes an op-ed piece that talks about how, well, this time Daniel Roof was all alone because there's no institutional racism, right? And completely denies that there's an ideology that Roof was connected to.
Even though he said he was, right?
Some of his reasons for this. Mm-hmm. So we are so firmly steeped in this idea of denying the idea of racism and denying the idea that there's an ideology of white supremacy that America has to deal with.
Well, it depends on who
the we is. I think that's the struggle. Right.
It depends on who the we is.
It depends on how we define we. Now, mm-hmm. I'm defining we broadly in terms of Americans and some pockets, you know, some citizens, and I'm including myself, but certainly that's not my belief system. And I'm very willing to, you know, sort of reckon with the concept of this being an ideology that still exists and that we struggle with hierarchies of race and some other hierarchies around social identity. But there are many people in the United States who are dedicated to denying the idea that that is the thing that happened. Yeah. Fox News is still dedicated to denying the idea that this was an act of terrorism or that it was connected to this broader thing. They were very wedded to the idea that this should be an attack on the church.
So let me get to that, because let's pick up from there. And do you all think that there was a shift from the moment that it happened when there was some real vigorous debate around, is it terrorism, mm-hmm. is it something else? Mm-hmm. But now, in the weeks after, as people started to think about, what does this flag mean? What are we saying? Mm-hmm. And Americans from the rest of the country stood by Charleston or said other things about how they began to view Charleston in the light of this manifesto coming mm-hmm. to light.
Has that changed? Is there more people on the terrorism side than not? Do you think?
I think it depends on who you're talking to, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think there's some subvert conversations that have not made it up to the surface yet.
Yeah.
And you can look at some of the social media devices, but again, those are kind of, you know, choir members, right? Mm-hmm. Who are your mm-hmm. friends and who you're connected with. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is, and Carol is right, there is this notion that white supremacy lives, and we're afraid to say that in this country. Mm-hmm. There is a constituency of individuals in South Carolina who do not want that flag down and right. who are adamant about that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you can see that in the notion of the politicians who are saying now that by them suggesting that they can advocate for the flag to come out would be political suicide, mm-hmm. that they may not be elected, regardless mm-hmm. of what political party they're in. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of duality of conversations. There's the kind of PC conversation that happens where everyone acknowledges that, you know, this was a wrong event. Mm-hmm. What we call it becomes this notion.
Right.
And then also, you know, this young man, you know, first he was crazy,
right.
then he was disturbed, mm-hmm. then he was deranged, and now he's confused, mm-hmm. but now there's a manifesto that's kind of logical, so maybe he's by himself.
Right.
Let me go back and just ask this. Nikki Haley, Governor Nikki Haley, came out and said, "Okay, I'm going to say that there mm-hmm. is yeah. some heritage here. Mm-hmm. Some may disagree yeah. with that. I'm going to say, but there is some hate here, mm-hmm. and whatever it needs to come down. I didn't used to think that, but it needs to come down, and others have joined her. Mm-hmm. So haven't we seen a shift then?
Alabama pulled the flag down.
Exactly.
They didn't pull for a debate later on in the summer.
To be right. clear, though, in South Carolina, it takes a two-thirds vote of the legislature, and so
they could have done yesterday.
Well, had to go into session, they have scheduled a special session to do so. And by the way, that flag is padlocked to that pole.
Absolutely. Yes.
I do think we've seen a shift. I think I agree with part of what Emmett is saying in terms of all these different media escapes. I call social media the fifth estate, and I think that it really works and brings all of us together, and black people are really at the cutting edge of that. So I think that even as Fox tried to do, what Cal was saying, really tamp this down, say it's an attack on Christianity, some Republican presidential candidates weren't brave and courageous. But even the president's eulogy today implied white supremacy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's in
gone more than just implied.
Yeah,
in recent statements, it's very
explicit and yeah. implicit. But I think that there has been a tonal shift. And I agree with what Keith was saying in terms of the way social movements work is about different pivot points. Mm-hmm. So Ferguson is one. Baltimore is one. The president snuck in a Black Lives Matter reference, and we mm-hmm. saw it by saying all children's lives, that mm-hmm. they matter. Mm-hmm. This is another pivot point. Interestingly, and this is different from Ferguson, this forced white politicians, conservative politicians, mm-hmm. into a different rhetorical stance. Mm-hmm. If for some state senators from South Carolina said, I knew Clementa Pinckney, right. and as a Christian, I want the flag down. This is very similar to Diane Nash. And we think about Diane Nash, one of the heroes of the civil rights movement, and she was part of SNCC, part of SCLC, and she confronts the mayor of Nashville. And she confronts the mayor of Nashville circa 1960, 61, and she talks about segregation to the mayor. And after talking to him, he says that, morally, I say that she's right, and now I'm on her side. Mm-hmm. Everyone, white people in Nashville went crazy. They
right.
said, what do you mean morally
right.
you're on? You
right.
just said, you had just said you were pro-segregation. You speak to this young black girl who's very light skinned, and now you say you're against it. And this is what's happened with the flag.
Okay, so Keith, let's strike at the heart of the social psychology of the moment as well, because there's a lot going on here. And this is where you and Emmett live to some degree, Emmett from a faith-based perspective, mm-hmm. and that is the victims, families, and loved ones came right out after Dylann Roof was brought in and said, we forgive you. Mm-hmm. Now that comes from their faith mm-hmm. journey.
Yeah.
But the psychological impact of that on white America, I would submit, is very much tied to what we saw in the civil rights movement when the nonviolent folk did not strike back.
I would say.
So, and that seems to me to be leaving folk nowhere to go, where they can't say, well, these people are crazy, they're imagining something is going on here.
Exactly.
How would you say that from a scholarly perspective?
Oh, well, that's a lot of challenge there. But
yeah.
I mean, I think, in general, you're absolutely right. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the idea, the grace that the president talked about today, of the nature of that response, the ways in which we would think we would respond, and yet we see a response that completely goes against that idea of backlash, of violence, that, you know, that Roof spoke of trying to incite a race war, and that, as a parishioner said, he came to the wrong place. So the fact that you could see that contrast in terms of how you think you might react to this kind of situation, and yet you see a reaction that goes against that, that's nonviolent, that's peaceful, that's incredibly powerful for people psychologically. And again, it doesn't lead people to sort of to get that sort of impression where they say, well, this is what I would have expected from this group of people, people who are like that. You see a response that challenges your beliefs, it challenges your stereotypes about a particular group, and it's one of the things that can help to lead to slow developing change in terms of ways in which you think about people, and then ultimately about the kinds of things those people may challenge and champion in their lives.
Does this at all help people to transcend a certain racial barrier in terms of how they think of themselves, that now I see me in that space? That could be my family, that could be me at Bible study.
Yeah.
And so that's something else that's going on there.
I think that's really important as well. And the idea, again, you want to try to break down those boundaries. So the extent to which, and when you were talking about this idea of thinking about yourself as an American and mm-hmm. we, even though you don't necessarily think that way, it's important mm-hmm. that we try to create that sort of superordinate understanding of ourselves, that mm-hmm. we are all in this together, that again, the them versus us, the us versus them sort of dichotomy, that's problematic. That's where we start to see this divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And when we can transcend that, and again, even in the most horrific circumstances, try to transcend that and see ourselves as a group, as one, I think that's going to be incredibly important in terms of helping to mitigate that psychological barrier. And that helps people to see and identify with each other and one another. So it also sort of relates to this idea that, again, when we're talking about the idea that these movements, you need these, as Peniel put it, these pieces or these points in time mm-hmm. that can to start to develop a groundswell of support. And, you know, this may, again, we're talking about gun violence, we're talking about race, we're talking about a number of different issues. If you weren't compelled by what happened in Connecticut earlier, you know, in terms of the school children there, if you weren't compelled mm-hmm. in Newton, thank you, mm-hmm. if you weren't compelled by what's happened in Ferguson, then what's happening here, because it's in a church, it's with a different group of people, that's something that's going to bring a number of group of people to look at this situation, to think about it in a way that they wouldn't have thought of before, and you're building a groundswell of support. You're building what is a movement, I would hope.
Okay, so let me follow up that and say, 10 years in the modern civil rights movement, people lynched, people killed, mm-hmm. people beaten, mm-hmm. nothing. Women, children, and men gassed and beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, mm-hmm. and a nation awakes. Mm-hmm. It's a whole mm-hmm. different thing. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to something that's been quite contentious, certainly among black folks talking, which yes. is, do black people have to sacrifice mm-hmm. themselves yeah. To forgive the unforgivable to get finally some attention from white Americans who should know better?
We've been doing it all our lives.
Yeah.
We have been doing
yeah.
it all our lives. The very nature of the beginning of the black church comes out of the fact that because of segregation and because of racism, black folks were not able to practice their faith. And so we had to create this church system in the hush harbors, as President Obama, the Reverend President Obama, you know, very correctly said. And so part of the black church narrative is that our black bodies have always been put up, right? And that's why we have this kind of real connection with Christ, right? Mm-hmm. Because we bear our cross every day of our lives. We carry it around with us, right? We don't get a chance to choose whether we're Christian today and whether we choose to be Christian tomorrow, right? And so part of our sacrifice has always been the fact that we don't know what tomorrow yields, but we know that by making the right choices today and focusing on a heavenly relationship, that we can see tomorrow mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And I just note that at the end of his eulogy, he breaks into amazing
yeah.
grace.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was not part of the program. No, he just started singing that right. to your point.
And what's interesting yeah. about Amazing Grace, which was composed by a slave trader,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right,
yeah.
who was right. convicted in the middle of trading slaves, right, and wrote this phenomenal lyric, right, that was placed to song, I think that was right on cue for Reverend President Obama.
All right, well, maybe we'll take a look at that. I think we might have some video of that just to, you know, Reverend President Obama. Let's take a look.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves. A wretch like me, I once was fallen.
What a resonance, Carol. When he started singing, everybody in that audience just got right in.
And symbolically, I think that is incredible. We may be witnessing part of a transformation. I do think that it's really important, this religious component. I think symbolically, what Keith said is really important in terms of people being able to empathize with the Charleston Nine. But I have to say, I'm a little bit worried at the same time, because I think what we found here is what they looked for so often in the civil rights movement, which is the perfect victim. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. If we were so perfect and so respectable.
Yeah. If we were Rosa Parks and not a 16-year-old
exactly.
pregnant girl.
Exactly. Then we would be worthy of sympathy and empathy and rights. And I think that's a really dangerous thing to be hearkening back to, because we want people to sympathize with the person who gets stopped and frisked as well, right? Yeah. And I think it's really important to not lose this momentum and to not just say, you know, this is terrible and we're making some changes that are symbolic because of how extraordinary and exceptional Clementa Pinckney was.
I agree.
And
right?
let me, before you answer, I want you to wrap this in there. And what does the flag then, the removal of the flag then mean in the context that Carol just expressed?
Yeah, Carol, I think what she said is brilliant. I think that what he said, though, is he talked about mass incarceration, and he talked about the least of these.
Yes.
So he talked about not making an exceptional. He talked about compassion towards young black men who are in jail, right? Mm-hmm. He talked about the police and making the police have better practices. Mm-hmm. So I think the Confederate flag becomes this monument that we're chipping away, but he says after the flag comes down, we have to do more. Mm-hmm. The grace that we've all received means policy. So for those of us who do the work we all do, policy is always the most important part of this, but him, as President of the United States, he can sign executive orders right now that help us in terms of policy, especially when it comes to the federal crime bills, the Byrne Grant. Mm-hmm. The DOJ can do reviews. Byrne Grant provides billions of dollars to local and state municipalities. Right now, all it's doing is incentivizing the incarceration of black and brown men and women from Boston to Oakland. Mm. And we could focus instead on rehabilitation. People are calling for the president to do this. He can sign this with a stroke of a pen. Mm-hmm. So right now, he's got to match deeds to these soaring words, right? Mm-hmm. So it can't just be, because he took us all to church today. But somebody who grew up in the Black Baptist Church by way of New York City, I know about Amazing Grace. Mm-hmm. I know about This Little Light of Mine. And he took us all over there, but it's got to be connected, because the black tradition is connecting faith to political deeds, right? Mm-hmm. From the antebellum period all the way to now.
Mm-hmm. Just want to remind our viewers that we're going to be going online and continuing this conversation, also taking up Rachel Dolezal's story as well. That is the key. So what policy? What do you think the people screaming take down the flag see as policy, see as a
everything
reasonable
from
response?
Everything from employment to incarceration.
Criminal justice reform.
But David Brooks in the New York Times talked about Robert E. Lee and saying that we need to take down the public signs of Robert E. Lee, right? Mm. Black
do you
scholars,
care about that, by the way?
We do to this extent. Black scholars and black feminists and black activists have been saying for decades that white supremacist culture is connected to the Confederacy and pro-slavery objects, right? So those belong in museums. When they used to call us pickaninnies and everything but children of God, we can study that, but that shouldn't be on highways, and our school children shouldn't be going to Robert E. Lee. So I think it's important, but it's got to be connected to larger substance. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. It's connected to education. It's connected to employment. It's connected to black women who need mental health issues. It's connected to our elderly. The criminal justice system is the gateway to racial oppression in the United States.
Mm-hmm. It's an important thing that Peniel is saying here, because if you look at the comprehensive piece, it's a big thing. But when you go to your grocery store and buy that Ancient Mama syrup, that's a holdover from minstrelsy.
That's
you buy that Uncle Ben's rice, right? That's a holdover from minstrelsy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And those are items that we look at and utilize on a daily basis, and most don't have an understanding and clarity of where those caricatures come from.
I mean, in a way, it doesn't matter where they come from or whether you have knowledge of where they come from. They play this implicit role. It's the air we breathe. It's the environment that we find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And all these symbols, the structures that are there, they all play a role in developing developing our sense of, you know, about who people are, about mm-hmm. why this person looks like that, yes. what they're like. Mm-hmm. And when we start to deconstruct some of those things, and deconstructing doesn't mean just taking them down, but explaining why we're taking them down.
Well, that's my point.
Right.
I'm with you on that. See, I am about the flag coming down, but I think some of these busts and whatnot need to be a part of a history lesson, a real one.
Yes.
But this was about slavery.
He gave
not
it
about
to us today, implicit bias, yes. when he talked about employers yeah. calling Johnny back, but
right.
not Jamal.
Exactly.
Right? And we've got data on that. Yeah. All of us who are social scientists know that black-sounding names don't get the same callbacks as so-called white-sounding.
To continue the conversation, see past episodes, or discover new stories, please visit our website at basicblack.org.
All these different names, and that's connected to exactly what he was saying. So the president gets it. It's about policy now.
My question then, and I don't know if you all were going with me, is that, or is everybody who's saying take down the flag understanding that this is a brilliant situation about policy?
No, not everyone
buys into it. I didn't get a chance to get to that yet, but that's sort of the point I want to get to, which is it's really easy for us all to agree on how sympathetic these victims were. It's incredibly important that the president said what he said today, that the speech was brilliant. And he named every problem, and he named racial justice, right? Yeah. Something that we have to get to. It's incumbent upon us to make sure that the conversation, that we don't let anyone